BreakTheBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for our weekly Tuesday meeting broadcast. Two professional handicappers, Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com, also Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com, recorded yesterday's segment with Cheetah. Lots of good stuff in there. We actually had an NBA component to that segment, but unfortunately had some recording issues at the end, so that'll be a topic that we talk about on next week's show, but still really good stuff there with Cheetah coming up later in the hour. We'll go ahead and start right away here today with our first guest. That is Mr. Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going great, Adam. Glad to be back on the show.
Well, glad to have you, and hey, now that the Super Bowl's over, I know you and I are both big-time baseball guys. You go down to spring training every year. We got teams, players reporting to spring training here next week. Starting to think spring, even though we got three more days of snow coming back here where you're from.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that from your account, but we're planning our vacation right now, and we're about a week away from spring training starting, and it's a lot of fun. If anybody ever gets a chance, Arizona's a little bit different than Florida. Florida, the sites are kind of far away from each other, but in Arizona, within 45 minutes, you've got seven different ballparks, 14 different teams, and it's a lot of fun out here, and you see a lot of Clevelanders out here when I'm going to some Tribe games, and I guess this year they really jacked up the prices on everything, so we'll see what happens after you get a little bit of success.
Oh, yeah. I've already experienced that a little bit in terms of my season tickets. Are you going up to Atlantis up there in Reno when the win totals pop or no?
I've done it in the past. Don't know if I'm going to do it. It's a timing issue. And plus, I'm not a snow guy, which is one of the reasons why I moved out of Cleveland. And Reno and Tahoe have been getting a ton of bad weather the last month. I've got some offers to go up there, a lot of free play, that kind of thing. So may head up there. They've got the Pretenders and Stevie Nicks are playing up there. They offer free tickets, so may take them and take that into account. Hopefully it all works out with the timing on the baseball futures.
Those usually open, they'll probably open the end of next week or so, or about the middle of February?
Yeah, it's hard to tell anymore. Who knows? Chris Andrews over at the South Point is taking over as a leader now here in Las Vegas, along with the Golden Nugget for college football games of the year. So everybody's always trying to outdo each other. So I haven't heard any announcements yet. I try to follow them all on Twitter, but it should be coming up pretty soon.
Well, that'll be good. We'll be able to chat with you about some of those numbers. And if you do happen to make it up there, talk about some of the ones that you hit. But for now, let's recap Super Bowl 51. And I don't know if that's something that you want to do or not. I'm not exactly sure how it went for you, but I guess that'd be the place to start. How did one of the greatest Super Bowls we've ever seen go for you?
It would have been better if it didn't go to overtime, but it was okay. I didn't make any money on it. I had the under 59, so that was a heartbreaker when I went to overtime. But I also had New England on the money line, needed to go to overtime to get that. Some of the props I played didn't quite get there. I played the running back for the Patriots. Blunt over in carries and over in yards. They try to give him the ball. I thought they would try to take some time off the clock. They didn't have any success in the first half, and he ended up a couple of rushes short. I believe if he wouldn't have fumbled the one time, they wouldn't have went away from him. But once they got so far behind, it took him out of the offense. So it was one of those that was a good handicap because that's what New England wanted to do. The bad part was they weren't having a lot of success. And plus, when you fall behind as much as they did, it took them away from the game plan, and I don't think anybody was looking at this as a first-half blowout when they were handicapping this game, so that kind of took us away from that. But I was really surprised. Neither team has put much pressure on the quarterbacks all season long, and both quarterbacks were just sitting ducks back there all game long, so the sacks went over. That one surprised me a little bit. So I didn't have the success that I normally have in the Super Bowl, so luckily, I was out of town for the openers, so I wasn't able to get down on a lot of the openers, because usually I have about 100 props, and this time I only had around 10, so by the time I got back in town, so most of them was playbacks off of trying to go off of the early lines and try to play back on the unders, and since it lasted so long, and going to overtime, the unders got kind of hurt a little bit on that too, because you had more time to play. But overall, great game. It wasn't profitable for me, but hey, it's one game in football, and hopefully everybody did fared better than I did.
Well, and I think what will be really interesting to see here is how adjustments are made for Super Bowl 52. Now, it'll be probably two different teams, a different situation, a different venue, obviously, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. But we've got that overtime game now. I mean, we were 0 for 50 on overtime. Now we're 1 for 51. I'll be really curious to see, you know, how the prices adjust for something like that. Tom Brady set a new passing yards record, so I'll be curious to see if the price adjusts for that type of thing at all. So, you know, that's always something to keep in the back of your mind here, even though we're, I think we're 362 days or something like that away from Super Bowl 52. But, you know, hey, always things to keep in mind there. I guess the last thing I'll ask about here in terms of the Super Bowl and sort of an overview of your NFL season as a whole, I know this is something we kind of talked about a little bit already. Anything that you'll look to incorporate here, whether it's stuff you'll look at for the preseason, like futures and win totals, or once games actually start to get going again?
I think at this point, I did so well in the college and I struggled in the NFL. Normally, I do pretty well in the NFL because I'm very selective. I let the numbers tell me where to go. If we've talked about this many times, where I think the line is going to go and getting ahead of the market, that's how you win in the NFL. But from a handicapping standpoint, I think I'm going to do less in the NFL, more in college in the future. The NBA is similar to that in college this year. I'm doing fantastic in college basketball and the NBA in tread and water. And the NBA, as we talked about in the past, it's hard to handicap because you don't know who's playing to the last minutes. And that changes the entire dynamic in the NBA and getting your plays up early. In college, for the most part, you know who's going to play. So I'm going to probably have more plays in college football and less in the NFL next year because I want to give my clients as many winners as possible. And I've done better in college. So and it's been the same in basketball this year also.
Well, I think that's a really excellent segue. I don't know if you designed it that way or not, though, into our topic here about bankroll management. I talked about this last night with Sports Cheetah, so it kind of gave me some ideas on the direction that I wanted to go here with this segment, because one of the really big distinctions I want to make about both you and Sports Cheetah is that, yes, you guys are handicappers. You do have premium selections available for clients, but both of you are also professional bettors. So there's a pretty big difference there between being a handicapper and being a bettor, and you're both of them. Some people are just one or the other. Some people bet for a living but don't sell games. Other people just sell games and don't actually, you know, bet as much as we would think. So in that respect, like you said, you're going to limit the NFL a little bit more, look at college a little bit more. That's a element of bankroll management. So I think that's a really good point to start here. And it sort of begs the question, do you have a separate bankroll that you allocate for each sport, or do you just have one collective bankroll and then make sure that you use it accordingly?
Yeah, I'm a little bit different with Cheetah on this. We've discussed this a little bit in the past. He does have separate bankrolls, I believe. But I just have my one bankroll, and I add to that, as the season goes on. It doesn't always work out that way. But, yeah, I use the same bankroll all year long. I've got one unit play. If you got if you have a $100,000 bankroll, your normal one unit play would be $1,000. I'm a flat bettor, and Cheetah is for the most part, too, unless he's got a big advantage in the game, which is same thing as I do. If I see a line that's really off, I'll bet two or three units on that, knowing that I can buy back on that when the line settles back into where it is. But most of the time, I end up with that one unit bet on a game. I may put up three and cut back two the other way, try to get the middle, but I'll end up with the one. And that way, I don't get hurt by one certain outcome. I also, another thing I like to do, and I've done it a lot in college basketball, is I'll divide up between first half and the full game. The reason in college basketball more than any other sport is because of the fouling at the end of the basketball game in college basketball. I've had games where at halftime I'm up by 24 points and laying 12, let's say, in a game, and they only win by 9 because of all the fouling in the second half. So I end up splitting those bets, but at least I don't lose on a situation that I can't control, which is how the fouling goes at the end of those games. So at this point, I wasn't doing a 50-50, but I'm going to start, because I've had such success in the first half, and it's just been amazing, Adam, how these have worked out. But I'm going to go 60.6 units in the first half and 0.4 in the second half and go from there, because in the NBA it's a little bit different, and obviously in the football it's different, so you can go 50-50. But with this, I'm gonna go 60-40 in the first half in college basketball.
The call back in, and I think that Brian, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Well, let's see here. I think the line's going to cut you off here in a second, so I do apologize for that, having some sort of technical issue here on today's show. See if we can get this thing squared away here. But, you know, I think that it's really interesting. We kind of talked about this a little bit in terms of football, where, you know, you were saying that you do like to go a little bit more with the first half because the game plan is going to play out the way that it's supposed to. Things should play a little bit truer there in the first half. In the second half, teams have to make adjustments. Your pregame handicapping, not to say it fully goes out the window, but there are some things that, you know, you would have to adjust to on the fly from a live betting standpoint. So I do think that it makes a lot of sense what you're talking about there, where you expect the first half to play out a little bit truer to the research that you've done.
Yeah, definitely. And we've talked about that. Once you get to the second half of the game, a lot of, especially in football, a lot of coaches will just plan out. They've already charted what they're going to do for the first 15, 20 plays or whatever in a game. I would much rather do that than having the score dictate how the game is playing out. If it goes, you know, you got a 20-point favorite in college football and teams up by 14, 10 at a half, well, it should play out exactly the same in the second half. But when you've got a team, for example, in the Super Bowl, you've got a team that was a 3-point favorite, all of a sudden they're down by, you know, 20 points or whatever at the end of the first half, obviously things are going to change. And you've got to come out and pass the ball a little bit different. Atlanta, instead of being aggressive, they kind of took the air out of the ball a little bit. I don't think they took the air out of the ball enough because they didn't run the clock a little bit more than what they probably should have. But, yeah, it's a totally different game at halftime. And I'm a firm believer in first half bets, and they're just as strong, if not stronger, than the full game.
Well, and that's a really important distinction to make here, and I hope our listeners are paying close attention to that. And, of course, I apologize for the technical difficulties. Hopefully you were able to hear Brian. I wasn't able to hear him on my end. But these are all elements of bankroll management. You want to look for edges wherever you can find them, and then you want to play on them. And another important point here to make about this, Brian, is, you know, this is something you've done for a long time, 25, 30 years, and yet here are examples of you still making adjustments. You know, probably when you started, I can't imagine there were too many first half lines available, if that was, you know, anything that they were even offering in terms of derivative betting, but you're making adjustments. And that's something that's really important here in this industry. I think that's another distinction between a bettor and a handicapper. A lot of times some of these handicappers that are out there, and I'm certainly not going to name names, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but they keep doing the same things that they've done for the last couple decades. Bettors can't afford to do that. So you always have to be adjusting. And I think it's really important to, you know, hammer home this point of playing to your strengths, whether it's a certain sport, a certain market, or looking more first half, second half, instead of the full game.
Yeah, definitely. I had a guy recently move out here to Las Vegas. He was in a service back east, one of the biggest services out there. But all they did, you know, for the most part, was release the plays. They weren't heavy bettors. Well, when he came out here and he came to our Tuesday meeting, and we started discussing the value of the points, and, you know, I like this team A at -2, neutral at -4, and if it was -6, I'd play team B. Well, to him, what he was looking for is the team that he liked, and it didn't matter as much to him what the line was. And after we'd gone to a few meetings, I said, have you learned anything? He says, yeah. He says, I can't believe how much you guys care about what the actual line is on a game. And I said, the line is all that matters in a game. Obviously, you want to pick more winners than losers. But if you're picking a game and you're getting the worst line at it, you may win, but it's not going to help you in the long run. You're trying to get the best line and the right side in every game. And so unless you bet for a living, and you know those half-point, one-point losses, getting the play at the wrong time, playing it too early, playing it too late, that kind of feel that you get when you gamble on a daily basis, you're not going to know that. And that's something that he has learned since he's come out here and started gambling for himself bigger than what he did, because obviously you don't have Las Vegas obviously out there when you're going from a different state. But it's one of the things that he learned, and that's the key. Is you got to be able to know what the right side is, but you have to know at what number that side's good, because who knows if that number was 4 in the Super Bowl, I might have been taking Atlanta in that game as opposed to the cheap money line on New England.
So I know that you said that you're a flat bettor, and that's something I want to elaborate on a little bit more here, because I think that's really a starting point that a lot of our listeners should take. Have you looked into Kelly at all, or any of those more advanced systems? Did you just find that they didn't work for you, or you're just content with what you've been doing in terms of flat betting?
Well, it does work better. If you're picking more winners than losers, and you've got enough charts where you can go back and grade yourself. The problem is not every year, not every season plays out exactly what the last season was. But if you're a winning bettor, Kelly's the way to go. But since I sell picks, I can't tell a client play, 1.23 units on this. It's just so confusing for the general sports buyer of our information to do that. And Cheetah and I have talked about this a lot. Neither one of us are one of these big hype guys that like to put out games of the year every other day or whatever, things like that. And that's really what the customers want. They don't want who's hot. They don't want who's made profit for years and years. They want whoever's got the big play. Well, Cheetah and I don't do that. We bet on a regular basis, day in and day out, and I make every single bet I make the same amount, unless I really see a line that's off. And like I said, I may bet 2 or 3 units on it, come back the other side when it moves to where I think it should be, and buy some of that back. So it's tough for us. I would much prefer a guy sign up for a week, for a season, do something like that, get my entire card for a day, than a guy who's just going to go in and play whatever I think is a slightly better bet than all the others. So it's the way the industry is. And unfortunately, Cheetah and I, we make a good living selling the picks, but we're not going to change what we've done for a living just to give out a lot of big plays to make that extra money. It's just not worth it.
And that's one of the interesting things about this industry, is that when you're strictly a handicapper, or at least, maybe 85% handicapper, 15% better, it becomes a marketing industry. But when you're a bettor, like you said, there's I want to say a moral obligation that may be kind of overstating it a little bit, but you are going to play everything that you're putting out, and you feel like you don't want to sit there and say, hey, this is a 5-dime play, if you're not putting a 5-unit play on it yourself. And for some people, they don't really care about that. But a lot of the good ones out there do. And that's why the people that I've picked to be on these shows are those good ones, are those ones that are honest and transparent, and are also betting the amounts that they say they are, because, hey, there are some people out there that really aren't. But I want to circle back to this flat betting thing for a second here, because like I said, for our listeners out there, probably the way that they should go, I mean, they don't have a ton of time to do something like a Kelly where they can figure out exactly what their advantage is, do all that research, do all those numbers, come up with the amount, the optimal amount that they should be playing. So for a lot of people, I would certainly recommend flat betting, at least if you're starting out, certainly if you're trying to build a bankroll, that's one of the ways that you would like to go, I think. So in terms of flat betting, Brian, what percentage of the bankroll would you suggest for somebody that's, for somebody that's starting out, first of all, and then maybe for somebody that's had a little bit of success at this, should they increase their percentage at all?
Well, most people who gamble for a living will tell you each play is either a half a percentage or 1% of a bankroll. If you have a $100,000 bankroll, you're either betting $500 on a half a percent or $1,000 on a full percent. So a lot of people bet too much. In fact, one of our colleagues, Ed Meyer, has written a book, and he talks about money management. And you could pick 60% winners. And for those that you have an educated group, so 60% winners is like fantastic, as opposed to what a lot of people have heard on the radio, that kind of stuff with the 70-80% whatever. But if you could pick 60% winners, if you're betting 16% of your bankroll on each game, eventually you're going to go broke. Now that's hard to understand for the layman, because you're picking 60% winners. But if you're betting too much, eventually you're going to get that 0-7 streak or whatever. And it's going to happen. It happens to everybody. Everybody gets on a winning streak, a losing streak. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers are the NBA champions. They've had a losing streak. You're going to have a losing streak no matter how good you are, and you don't want to overbet. I'm a very conservative person. I bet the 1% is what I bet, and I'm very fine with that. I grind out the profit. Every bet I'm making has a little bit of an edge to it. You only need to win 52.38 if you're laying 11 to 10. Every time I put out a play, I expect it to win 54% or higher. So I'm grinding out a little bit of an edge, 1.5%, 2% on every bet I make. And that makes me increase my bankroll as the season goes on, which in turn, when you do have an increase in your bankroll, you start at 100. By the end of the season, you're at 150, 200, that kind of thing. And you are actually betting more in those games, but you're still betting the same percent.
Yeah, and that's a really important thing to point out there is, you know, and it's something that Cheetah talked about in his segment, which we'll hear next. Your percentage just inherently goes up as you make more money, because 1% of a higher bankroll is going to be a higher unit size. So you don't need to start increasing your bet amounts just because you're doing well. Say, you know, you're going from, oh, well, I'm doing well, I'm going to go from $100 a game to $200 a game. Stick with that percentage format, because you're just naturally going to be increasing the size of your bet if you're making money doing this. So lots of really good stuff there. And like I said, I was really excited to talk about this segment today with two professional bettors that know the value of a number and certainly know the value of bankroll management as well. One thing I do want to point out here, you sent me over your Tuesday card, gave me a chance to take a look at it, see if I could come up with some talking points here for today's segment. And I saw that one of the statistics that you're using for college basketball is effective field goal percentage. Now, when we talk during football season, you look at the sacks, you look at explosive plays. Those are two of the really big hallmarks of your handicapping. What else do you have in college basketball besides effective field goal percentage?
I take a look at turnovers, teams that commit turnovers, teams that have problems with turnovers, the steals, the block shots, that kind of thing. Do they have a rim protector? The reason I use the effective field goal percentage is most teams will shoot better at home, poorer on the way. So if a team has there's one of the games that I played today, which there's a team that does not shoot exceptionally well anyway, and they're going on the road playing a team that just plays tremendous defense. So you've got a team that is an average shooting team, and now they're going on the road, which would be tougher for shooting, and they're playing against one of the best defenses in college basketball, and the line's, you know, in a nice range. So those are the kind of things I look at. In the NBA, it's a little bit different. NBA is so much into travel, the scheduling situation. That takes precedence over anything to me. Three games of 4 days, back-to-back. We saw Cleveland and Washington yesterday. Cleveland's more of an older team, an aging team. Washington is a young team with, you know, John Wall is just an extremely fast playmaker. The Cavaliers have problems with teams like that. Toronto is a team like that. So it's a little bit of a matchup problem for Cleveland. They've got the experience, but they don't match up that well with those younger teams that can run on them. Just sort of matchups like that in the NBA, it's a little bit different for me in college. And one thing that I like to use in college, and I don't know if I put it – I might have talked about it in one of my write-ups for today, but that is how teams have done in this series on that court. There's certain teams that just do not win on the opposition's court. New Mexico, every time they come to UNLV, I've been to enough Rebels games here as a season ticket holder to know that New Mexico is always live in those games, because every year they know how to win here. They travel a lot of their people are here. You go to the league tournament here, and there's more UNLV fans than anybody, but right behind them is New Mexico. And if New Mexico wins, they buy the season or buy the ticket packages up off the other teams. New Mexico represents very well here, and they always perform well in the tournament here.
Well, I want to talk about the MAC, because we've got six MAC games here tonight, and I believe I didn't see any on your card here. So, we can dig in a little bit to some of these matchups, because the MAC is a really interesting league. We talk about conference specialization. That's something we talk about all the time here on this show. The MAC is just one that you've followed for a long time, and you've had a ton of success with it, both in college football and in college basketball. And lately on the shows here, we've been talking a lot about top 25 type teams, a lot of the big conferences. So I want to try to get some love for some of these mid and low majors here. What are your overall impressions of the MAC, aside from the obvious fact that Akron is apparently head and shoulders above everybody else?
Well, the sad part is Ohio was, by my ratings, slightly better than Akron until they lost their best player due to injury earlier in the season. That was just a real shame because Ohio had a really good chance to make it to the big dance. They're still surviving. They're 6-4 in conference play with the injury. But, yeah, right now it's clear to me that Akron is the best team in this conference. And being an Akron graduate, I'm very happy for that. But that's a team and a coaching staff, you know, very familiar with all the local talent there. And Akron's had a lot of success. And Akron looks to be, at this point, the best team. But you've got some other teams. You know, Ball State's 15-8 overall in the season. They've done well. They're leading the West right now at 6-4. They're a pretty good team. But you have a lot of teams that are all basically interchangeable. Kent State, Buffalo are very good teams. Northern Illinois, Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan, really good. They come in 15-8, but they're only 5-5 in conference. So they packed their preseason with some easier games. But basically it's Akron, slightly Ohio less. I still think Ohio is a pretty good team, even shorthanded. Then you got down to the end, you got, you know, Miami and Western Michigan, I think, are a little bit farther behind everybody else. But basically the MAC stacks up where you've got the one half, which is basically Akron. Ohio I like, and then you got the lesser teams at the bottom. Everybody else is pretty much interchangeable at this point.
So how hard of a handicap does that make the MAC? I mean, this is one of your areas of specialty, but you have a lot of teams that are really average. It's one of those leagues where everybody's kind of beating everybody, except as we talked about Akron, who's 9-1 in conference, and they just lost to Ohio over the weekend. But how do you handicap a situation like that where it appears like, for lack of a better term, you've got a lot of parity here?
You do have a lot of parity. And what I'll do is, I make my own lines on each of these games, everything on the card. And what I'm looking to do is play 2 points or higher off of what my line is. Earlier in the season, you will find games in which you have a bigger discrepancy because you're playing a lot of non-conference. Once you get into conference, it tightens up all the lines and all. But let me go down just a few of the games here in the MAC. I give you what my line is. And keep in mind for those listening, that if the line across the board would be 2 points, either higher or lower, I would probably have a play on these games. We've got Northern Illinois, Buffalo. I made it 6.7 for Buffalo. Bowling Green, Kent State, 9.9. Kent State's a team on the rise. Bowling Green struggling a little bit. Ohio, now this is with their full complement, 11.2, which would be a play on Ohio. But without the same player, the top player that they have, that's probably a 4-point drop-off. So it's probably 7.2. Toledo at home against Eastern Michigan, I got it 2.6. Akron against Ball State. Here we've got the division leaders both in the East and the West, and I still make Akron 9.5, which you can tell is higher than anybody else. So that I'm in agreement that Ohio's the best team. Western Michigan and Miami 0.3. That's basically a pick 'em game. So when I go over these lines here, and I do the same thing for all the conferences in college basketball. We've even got Siena and Iona. I made Iona 6.2 tonight. So that's the first thing I do is I make all my lines. And then once I get done with that, I go through and check the lines. And I try to bet the openers as much as I can, knowing that chances are the lines are going to go towards my numbers. Same as what we do when we're betting the opening numbers in college football. As soon as they come out, I want to get part of that number because chances are it's going to be the best number I have. So I treat it all the same, regardless of what conference it is. I specialize in college football in the MAC. In the MAC, in college basketball, I treat it basically the same as everything else. So I don't have any specific amount of, you know, my MAC game of the week or things like that, like I do in football because people are looking for that. But basically in the MAC, even though I follow it because I'm an Akron graduate and I love the MAC, I treat it the same for betting purposes as any other league in the country.
Now, there are a couple of specific situational examples I want to ask you about here with regards to the MAC. And obviously, this is different for every team in the country because every team has different personnel, different leadership from a coaching standpoint. But when you look at a situation like Akron here, I mean, they haven't lost at the Jar in forever. I don't even remember the last time that they lost. But they lost to Ohio over the weekend. Like I said, they fell from 9-0 to 9-1 in conference play. The inclination from a lot of novice bettors out there is to simply look right at this game and say, Akron's going to bounce back. You know, this is a very good team. It's a team that should come out of Cleveland with that MAC tournament, which is always a crazy event. There's always something fluke that goes on there in that thing. So who knows who might actually represent the MAC. But like I said, the inclination for everyone is going to say Akron's going to bounce back. And so far, this number is pretty close to where you have it. So is that something you would caution people about right away?
Yeah, people just assume teams are going to bounce back. For example, I believe it was Saturday, Duke got one of their players back, and they also got the coach back. And my line was actually saying that there was slight value on Duke, but the line wasn't showing it. And actually, you know, Duke struggled once again in that game. So just because this situation is there, keep in mind, just because you expect somebody to come back and bounce back doesn't mean they always do. There's even good teams get on a losing streak and don't play well. I talked about the Cavs earlier in the NBA. So just because it's there doesn't mean it's always going to work. What I prefer is a team who is coming off of some tough opponents and lost, and now they step down a class. It's sort of like a horse racing situation. And they're getting a decent number, and they've shown that they can beat this team in the past. That's the kind of team I want to be betting on, is whereas the public would lose faith in a team who's lost three or four in a row, despite playing really good teams. I think there's value in that regard, because you're not getting the people expecting that bounce back. You're getting people that have given up on that team. And I think I talked about this on a few segments, you know, earlier in the season, about losing faith in teams and jumping off the wagon. If there's something there that you think has a positive on this team, just because it loses that first time, don't jump off. You're probably onto something, and you can make some money on that team later on while everybody else has jumped off and you get the better lines.
Well, the other obvious example here tonight with regards to the MAC is Ohio. Ohio knocks off Akron. They won that game 85-70. It was a closer game than that. Akron was actually around 24% from three, and they took 37 of them. So that's kind of how that game got out of hand a little bit. Ohio, Simmons had a career high with 38 points there in that one. So, again, the thought process for a lot of people will be, well, Ohio's going to have a letdown. You know, they just won this big game. They had a guy that had a career high in points. Now they're a 8.5, 9-point favorite against a Central Michigan team that's not bad and has arguably the best player in the MAC, in Marcus Keene, I believe his name is. So that's another one of those situations, and these pop up all the time in college basketball where, you know, people just automatically expect something and can blind themselves to some other angles in the game.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I like to do, shooting varies, and what I mean by that is you just talked about Akron is shooting the threes. Certain games, people get hot and they shoot from the threes. And, you know, that's why we see a lot of upsets in the NCAA tournament, because you'll find a team that comes from a smaller conference that shoots a lot of threes. And the better team from the bigger conference, basically, it's more of a variation. When you're playing in conference, you know what everybody does. If this team shoots threes, you prepare for that. You don't see as much variance in conference play. But when you're playing a team that you don't face, you're a big favorite, you go into the tournament, and this is a team that shoots a lot of threes, those teams are always live for the upset. They're either going to get blown out or they're going to pull off the upset. And that's what it does when you shoot a lot of three-pointers. If you're hot, you win. If you're cold, you get killed. And I like to play teams that play very good defense. And this Ohio, their opponent field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, 46.1, which is excellent. So even if they don't have their best player, they're still a very good defensive team. And a lot of times you'll see teams lose a key player and still come out and play that same defense, even better defensively, because they know they have to stop the opposition because they're not going to score as much points. So we've got them against Central Michigan tonight. And I'm not worried too much about Ohio beating Akron. They're still only 6-4 at conference. I don't think they'll get too big-headed. You know, that game was at home. I think it's a confidence builder for them. They lost at home the last time they played. They lost to Toledo 79-76. So it was nice for them to get back on the winning trail at home In fact, they'd lost two straight games at home, losing to Eastern Michigan by four. So that was a nice showing for them. But it wouldn't surprise me. They come out and play a real good defensive game here also. And like I said, it's probably about 7.2 is what I make it, which is a slight lean towards the dog. This game is going to come down to the way Ohio plays their defense.
A lot of excellent insights here today from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over at the website right now?
Actually, going in to do videos tomorrow, but I do want to do something I haven't done when I've been on this show. I sent you my plays for today. We have seven plays. I've written up four of them. I'd like to make that available to any of your listeners if they want. If you don't mind, if I could give them my email address, all they have to do is send me an email, and then I'll just forward them my plays for today. If you don't want to do that, they're all available over at Wager Talk right now. But if that's okay with you, I wouldn't mind doing that for your clients.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah. You just send me an email to leonardsports@cox.net. That's leonardsports@cox.net. All you have to put up is free today's plays or something. And then I'll just forward you what I've sent Adam and what I send my clients each day. And you can take a look at what we played, track those a little bit. And then, like I said, I've got write-ups on four of those and been doing very well. And just keep in mind, the first halves, as Adam and I talked, we've been doing even better. So make sure if you are going to play these plays, split them up half of the first half, half of the full game. And hopefully we have another nice day, just having a terrific college basketball season, hitting 59% coming into today. So it's been a good season. Hopefully I can share some winners with your listeners.
Well, thank you so much for that, Brian. Really appreciate it. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BLeonardSports. Brian, thanks, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Best of luck to everyone.
Really good segment there with Brian Leonard. And you know, like I said, one of the things I really like here about the guys that we have on this show is that they are bettors as well as handicappers. And that's a different perspective. You know, there are a lot of people out there that will talk the talk, so to speak, but won't walk the walk. And I generally hate that expression, but I think it really fits here because you know, you want to make sure that you're getting advice or buying selections from somebody that is actually out there, you know, doing this. And I think that's a really big difference and something that I think is should resonate well with our listeners out there. Before I get into today's segment with Sports Cheetah, which, of course, as I said, we recorded last night. Like I said, unfortunately, we had an NBA component to it as well. But we had some recording issues there during the end of that segment. So we'll talk about that topic next week. But I just want to remind all of our listeners out there, DSI Sportsbook, use that promo code BTB Radio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other option through DSI is the promo code BANG200. That'll get you 100% bonus for the sportsbook, 100% bonus for the live casino. So two good options there from our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. One more segment left for today's show. That is this segment with Sports Cheetah, of course, for our live listeners. This live stream will cut off at about noon Eastern time. Sorry about that, but it is what it is. There's really not too much that we can do about it. But you can get all the segments over at bangthebook.com. We cut everything down for you. You can also get the full show broadcasts. Then also over on Spreaker, we have the segments. So there's no shortage of places to get our Bang the Book radio content. Without further ado, here is this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Sports Cheetah, of course, from WagerTalk.com. Preston, how are you today, man?
I'm doing all right, hanging in there after that Super Bowl yesterday, but you know, life goes on. It's not the end of the world.
No, it's definitely not. And you're a tremendous handicapper and a very, very smart bettor, so I know that you'll get everything back that you lost on that game and then some. But it's sort of a decent segue into our segment, and I hate that it's at your expense, of course, but wanted to take some time to talk about bankroll management here in today's segment because a lot of people can handicap games. A lot of people can pick winners, can do okay against the spread. But the reason that they're not good at this industry is because they're not good bettors. They don't adhere to proper bankroll management techniques. Obviously, you had a rough Super Bowl. So in terms of your bankroll management skills, what are some of the things that you've learned here as you've matured throughout this industry?
Yeah, you can't. Obviously, just ship it all in on one game. I don't know if I ever actually had to learn the hard way, which maybe it sounds like I'm boasting, but I'm just more grateful for it than anything else. But, you know, there's a lot of people you hear about, you know, 99% of bettors don't win. And I attribute a lot of that just to the fact that people can't manage a bankroll. And since I came from playing poker regularly online and trying to grind and do all of that, the management of the bankroll thing just kind of applied directly and immediately for me to sports. So I didn't really, you know, have this sense of where I couldn't really grasp, I guess, how much to risk per game, estimating how many games I was going to be betting over the course of a season or an entire calendar year and whatnot. So I was hopefully, you know, fortunate in that regard. As far as the Super Bowl went, just coincidentally, I mean, that was like the biggest edge I think I'd seen in a total all season. So, and plus, I think there were some other factors that kind of came into, you know, wanting to play the under on top of the fact that I thought the actual number was, you know, 5 to 6 points high. And so it just added up for me to make a really strong play, but nothing that, you know, is going to keep me from buying groceries this week or anything, fortunately. The strangest thing to me was that the total actually moved down like 2.5 points the day of the Super Bowl, which you rarely see. There's so much money being bet on the Super Bowl that even the sharpest of all sharp groups and guys, whatever, like plow money into the market in the Super Bowl, and it rarely moves the line. And you saw, you know, it closed 56.5 some places, or 57 maybe plus money some places. So that was pretty significant. I felt really, really good about having under. Obviously, before the game started when I saw the move, and also 19 minutes into the game when it was 0-0. So it was just an unfortunate beat, and, you know, you move on. And I had some props that were correlated to the under, which won, so I kind of got some back. I had, like, no score for 6 minutes, for 6.5 minutes, for 7 minutes, for 7.5 minutes. You know, I went 4 for 4 on those. More points second half versus first half. You know, some props that came in. I don't really bet a ton on the props to begin with. You know, they're more for fun and kind of to get some of that variance eliminated in angle. We kind of talked about that on a show. I think maybe it was just the last one we did. But, you know, for something like that where somehow you're under 58 through 59.5 all lost, and, you know, they look dead on for a while, but anything can happen in one sample or one crazy game like we saw. So it was nice to have some other pieces of some bets or props specifically that gave me some money back in that regard. So, you know, as far as my overall bankroll, I think some guys here in town really put a lot of their money, and I mean older guys, at Las Vegas, Chris is one I saw tweeting about it. I've talked to him about it before. You know, him and his group of guys, they just basically bet as much money as they can across all the books here in town every Sunday after numbers kind of move down. And a lot of it, I think, is like scalping or trying to set up middles and this and that. But they also, and I had two of these, and of course they went 0-for-2 all because of that ending on the last drive. But they really plow into those big, heavily juiced props where, you know, the one that's really common people talk about is the safety yes or no. And, you know, come Sunday, you know, safety no is supposed to be twice what you can get -550 or -600, and it's supposed to be maybe -1100. One I bet was Amendola no touchdown -330. He was supposed to be like, I think it was -900 was my range on him. You know, no quarterback over 415 yards, I got him -400. Was supposed to be just under double that. I think it was like -775. And a lot of those are because the tourists come in, and a lot of people betting into those props just want to take the shot at 5, 6, 7, 8 to 1. And so those heavily juiced favorite type props. Another one they all bet into is no missed extra points. And sure enough, there was one that clanged off the right post. So I know a lot of those guys that put a lot of their bankroll into the Super Bowl props, and I'm not sure they did very well. So it's definitely tough to gauge. And the reason I don't put a lot into the props is because I haven't necessarily found a reason to, other than the scalps, which I think I had mentioned on a show previously as well, that I was putting a bunch of money into those. But I don't really count that as my bankroll, because if I'm just free rolling $100, you know, either way, that's like free money, and you get the comp points at each book, and it's great. But my actual percentage of my bankroll at risk on props plus the, you know, the the actual underplay, you know, was still like under 10% of what, you know, I have allotted to bet sports. So it was not anything crazy. And a lot of the props, you know, that I did win gave me back some of that money too. So, you know, I lost a pretty big amount yesterday, but it was all right. I won an offensive rookie of the year on Dak Prescott the night before, so I shouldn't be complaining too much in the end.
Well, and you brought up a lot of things there that are related to bankroll management. And one of those ones that I really liked is that, you know, you were looking at your edges, your advantages with some of those heavily juiced prop numbers that, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I can't lay minus 400 on something. I can't lay minus 600 on something. But if you're talking about a minus 400 and you perceive the true value to be minus 775, that's an element of bankroll management where you have an advantage. That's something that you should be playing. You know, you can't be afraid of heavy juice as long as you have the bankroll for it, of course, just because it's heavy juice. If there's an edge there, it needs to be played.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly probably didn't play everything that I could have too, because I was trying to be a little reasonable with how much I was betting on Super Bowl props, because there's so high variance in general, you know, one by one individually to one game, you know, a missed extra point or Amendola catching a touchdown and randomly having like 7 catches and 100 yards or whatever he did, and that basically doubled his season total on receiving stuff. It's just so many things can happen. You know, James White scoring 3 touchdowns, like that. It's just so random. And so to put so much into it, I just don't feel like I have a big enough edge across everything to do that well enough. But if you're confident that you do, and I was very confident about the Amendola one or the quarterback one at minus 400 where neither throw for 415 plus. Yeah, you're supposed to bet them. And, you know, another one I did Hogan, no touchdown, was minus 175. So I laid juice on that. It wasn't as big, but that was another one. And that one did win, fortunately. But yeah, if you perceive an edge, you're supposed to bet it. And, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter how big your bankroll is. You know, you said, you know, as long as you have a big enough bankroll, I mean, if my bankroll is only $100, you know, that Edelman bet should still be, you know, like risking $2.50 or something. So that's, you know, it doesn't matter how big your bankroll is. Ultimately, you should be breaking it up accordingly, you know, how big you perceive your edge is. And then how big is the bankroll? If it's small or big, doesn't matter. Just bet that percentage towards that play and then, you know, move on to the next one.
And I think another thing that a lot of people don't really pick up on here from a bankroll management standpoint is that, you know, the size of your bets, the percentage amount that you have in play is relative to the number of games that you play. For you, for example, you're a high volume guy. So your unit size is going to be a little bit smaller because you're looking to add up a lot of smaller edges into a bigger edge. For other people that are very, very selective, maybe they have, you know, 3 college games on a Saturday, 1 or 2 NFL games on a Sunday, they're going to have a little bit bigger of a unit size. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that a little bit, because you are a high volume guy. You just found that approach works for you?
You know what? To be completely honest, it did just work well for me from the get-go. Maybe it began with the fact that I was just a degenerate that wanted action on 30 of the games. But as I really learned how everything works and the math behind it all, you'd be surprised how much value there is, even at like a 2% ROI, which seems really low. But if you're only betting like 20 games or 30 games over the course of the season, that's not going to really add up much. You know, say you bet 30 games, it's like 2 NFL games a week, like you were saying, 1 to 2 a week. Just say you risked $100 on all of them, you know, that's $3,000. You know, your 2% ROI means you made like $60. You know, that doesn't really sound fantastic, and I hope my math's right. But either way, it's like, oh, great, over the course of a season, I made $60. Well, that's because you only bet 30 games now. If you bet, you know, 300 at $100 a game, you know, you're going to be making $600. So assuming you have a similar ROI. So ultimately, the volume, just that's like 10 times. You know, if you have a positive return on your investment, you should be trying to bet as many games as you possibly can that give you that, you know, return, or that give you an edge. So I think a lot of people actually limit themselves and limit their potential profits and opportunity by betting less games. And I think the common or novice better is worried about the vig and how it's so hard to beat the minus 110 to begin with. So betting so many games, et cetera. I actually think that it's a mistake if you're trying to be too selective. And if you're risking too much of your bankroll on one play, versus spreading it across multiple plays. You know, if you had 30 games in an NFL season, that's the other thing about variance. You know, I've had 30 game swings in sports, just any league, where, you know, I've gone on like 26-4 runs and 10-20 runs over 30 games. So you're basically telling yourself over the course of an NFL season, I'm okay if I go 10-20, and it's definitely a possibility. And then you look really bad and you lost quite a bit of money because you went 10-20 that year in the NFL. You know, and you also could go 20-10. I mean, it's possible, and that's great if you're betting bigger. But I just think you actually eliminate some of that short-term variance by betting higher volume, and you also maximize your profitability because you're betting more edges and you're betting more. And so your return on more games is going to be more than it would be on less games. So for me, I think when it really comes down to the math of and you know the aspects from a profit standpoint, it just makes sense that it really kind of compounds on each other. If you're betting a bunch of games, but you have an edge in all of them, that's the way to go versus not betting edges and only betting the bigger ones. It doesn't make any sense. Now, a lot of guys, you know, like you could do Kelly's type betting where you're adjusting your bet size according to how big you perceive your edge, or you can just flat bet. Either way, if you're confident you have an edge, I think you need to attack it. And, you know, ultimately, I think you're going to make more money that way.
So what is your approach? I know you mentioned Kelly there in passing, and you know, Kelly is something we talked about a little bit last week with Rob Pizzola, and it's something that our listeners can go and look up. I think it's a lot easier to read about it than to hear about it so that you can, you know, actually see it in practice there. But
sure.
Do you subscribe to Kelly, or are you a flat bettor? Do you have, you know, some sort of model where it spits out, you know, what you should bet based on your perceived edge? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think whatever is more comfortable for whichever bettor is great. The Kelly is definitely a more detailed and precise way to bet, and I think it's very, very valuable, especially in a market like baseball and hockey where they're just like prices, and you could really distinguish what your edge is to an exact cent or percent and then bet accordingly. Whereas football, I mean, you can still do the math and figure it out, but like, you kind of know, like if you're getting +7.5, you know, and your number's 6, like it's worth betting, and it's probably worth betting like 1X or your standard unit. You know, if you're getting +7.5 and you think the number should be 2.5, that's like a massive edge because you're like getting through the 3, the 4, the 6, and the 7, you know, then you're going to bet that bigger. So what it's kind of more like instincts, I guess, really when you're just getting started, if you don't want to do the math, to really find out what your exact Kelly, you know, using 0.2, whatever percent bet would be of your bankroll. I mean, just look at what your numbers are, look at what the number being offered is. And when you bet it, you know, just kind of use common sense. You know, if it's +6 is your number and you're getting +7.5, that's a fine bet. And you like the spot for the team, et cetera, all the other variables add up and, you know, go for it. But a lot of what I do when I send stuff to clients will be generally kind of like a 1X standard unit base, 1.5 or 2 is like a big play. So I bet a lot of stuff for like half X or like half unit stuff, which I generally don't send out just because people are already kind of uncomfortable with my volume at times. So people don't even know I probably will have, you know, 15 to 20 games that I actually give out to clients every weekend for football. And then you have second halves on top of that. But I probably personally bet twice that many. But a lot of them are for smaller amounts because I have tried to adopt more of that Kelly approach where I'm betting smaller edges and still getting money down on them because I know long term, you know, even if you're only hitting 53.5% on the smaller edges versus 55 on the bigger ones, you know, there's nothing wrong with hitting 53.5%. So I'm kind of adopting that myself more in the past 2 years than I did before, and I definitely think it's worthwhile.
So for somebody that's just starting out, I mean, let's just come up with a round number here. Let's say that somebody's starting out with a $1,000 bankroll. What would be their starting unit size for in your mind? You feel like it's a 3% type of thing, it's 1%, 2%? What range would you sort of suggest to people that, you know, are novices and, you know, really need some sort of direction?
Well, I'll say this. If you're definitely a novice and you don't know if you're actually going to be profitable, then you definitely should go lower. So, I mean, if you don't know if you have edges or not, but you're just betting games with your $1,000 bankroll just for the sake of betting games, you want to make it last as long as possible because most likely you're not going to win. So you want to just bet 1%. I think if you're confident in what you're doing and beating the closing number and, you know, being ahead of the market and winning long term, then you're fine betting a bigger percentage per play. But it's ultimately kind of dependent on, I think, where you gauge yourself as a bettor. And if you gauge yourself as a, you know, a profitable bettor, then 2% is great. I think that's a good median or medium. 3% was what WagerTalk uses kind of as their base play. Personally, you know, that's just what they use. It's their company thing. A lot of my clients know that I'm only betting generally about 1 to 2%, you know, per play on my own stuff. And, you know, the guys, it's funny though, because guys that do actually bet a full 3%, like the WagerTalk site kind of suggests when you send out a play, they've made more money over the course, you know, from a ROI standpoint over the course of the season than I have. Because if you're adjusting your, and this is something else that maybe you were going to get into later, but if you start with $1,000 and say you're betting like 3% per play versus 2%, I don't know about if I'm able to articulate the math very well off the top of my head, but just say over the course of a month, 4 weeks, you were up like 10 units. So if you're betting, you know, $20 a game versus 30, you know, you're up 300 versus 200. Now, what you're supposed to do after a weekend or 2 weeks, kind of whenever you decide, is start betting the percentage versus, you know, what your current bankroll is. So for someone that is betting 3%, after the first week, say they were up, you know, $100, they should be betting 3% of 1100. And then, you know, they gauge it from there. And at the end of the week, if they're up 1150, they should be betting 3% of 1150. And then at the end of that month, they're up 300, like I had mentioned as an example, they should be betting 3% of 1300. Now, for someone that's only doing 2% per play, they're not going to be able to, I guess, you know, profit as much because you're only betting 2% of, you know, every bet. But you should either way be adjusting your percentage as you go up and down. And that's the other, well, people don't realize is if you're in a downswing, if you're doing that, which a lot of people won't do, and in fact, they actually start betting bigger to try to chase their earlier losses in a downswing. But if you're using the percentage method and actually betting a percentage of your bankroll for each play, you lose less, you know, during a downswing, because it's a similar example, but let's say you lost, you know, 200 or 300 over the course of the month. Well, now, instead of betting 2% of 1,000 where you started, you're only betting 2% of 800 or 3% of 700. And, you know, that's going to be less money. And ultimately, you know, you could be the worst bettor of all time, but if you're actually adhering to that method, you could never actually run out of money because you're only betting a percentage of what you have left versus a percentage of where you started the season. So for people that want to just flat bet the entire year, I think that's fine too. And I think people are more comfortable saying, you know, I'm going to be putting $1,000 into this. I'm going to bet, say, 20 or 30, or even if some, most people, it's probably like $50 a game and they don't really have a bankroll to sustain that. But if you're doing well and you're profitable, great. And they just flat bet the whole season, I think that's fine as well. But if, for people that want to maybe try to really, I guess, what's the word? Get more efficient in bankroll management. The one point would be what we talked about before, that's actually varying your bet sizing according to your edge, if you're able to do that. And the second would be varying your bet sizing according to your bankroll, which should be, you know, ever changing. You could adjust it every day, every week, every 2 weeks. I generally will kind of adjust after, you know, Sunday ends. You know, my new Saturday basically ended for college football, and I have a separate bankroll for each league. So for Saturday, that'll end Saturday night, and then come Sunday when I start hitting some of the openers and stuff, I kind of have an adjusted number that I'm betting that could be different than the week before. If I lost the week before, then it's going to be less. If I won, then it's going to be a little bit more. And I think that'll be something that, you know, people that are trying to become more efficient with that stuff and a little more detailed, you can look into that. And if you have more questions or I wasn't explaining it completely clearly, then ask me on Twitter or message Adam, and I'm sure he can help you too. But those are the two main points, I think, if you're wanting to really kind of get that bankroll management and the details and the specifics to the point where you're doing it, I think, optimally, then you should definitely be implementing those.
Now, there's one thing I want to follow up on a little bit here, and this will actually be a pretty good transition to talking about a couple of specific markets here. You said you've got a bankroll for each league. So, you know, obviously that's something that helps you keep everything in order. But do you, you certainly have strengths and weaknesses. You know, I mean, every handicapper does, every bettor does. So do you have the same, since you have a separate bankroll then for each sport, I guess that would mean that, you know, you have a different unit size for each sport because your percentage of your bankroll is going to be different in each sport. So do you play a little bit heavier on your stronger markets? Do you play a little bit less on your weaker markets? How do you approach that?
Yeah, absolutely. My two biggest leagues I bet, I'm college football, and it's because I've adjusted according to how I've done, and since I've just done really well over the years in college football, that's by far my biggest bet now as far as the league-to-league stance is concerned. And, you know, the next is actually the NBA, and then it's the NFL, and then it's college hoops, because college hoops, I either win 40X or lose 20X. It's just the weirdest, like, up-and-down seasons that I've had over the course of my doing this, but it's definitely worthwhile doing, I think, especially if you're betting a lot of volume. So I didn't used to do it this way, but when I really started recognizing, I don't know, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago that I really was like, I need to just have a separate bankroll, not only for each league, but also for preseason futures versus the regular season. So say I have, we'll use the $1,000 example again, to put into college football. That's, you know, I'd probably take almost half of that and at least a third and put it into season win totals and potential like division or conference champions. And, you know, maybe a Heisman prop like or a national championship future as well. But I think there's a lot of value in those. So they're very, very soft markets and numbers. And, you know, that includes games of the year, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even as of late, I'm not betting much into those because it's tied up for so long because you're literally not able to access that money for 5 months, maybe longer. And, you know, so you have to just be smart about how much you're putting into your futures. And so when I decided I was going to break each bankroll by league, and I've been doing that now for a long time, I realized, you know, for college football especially, and I do really well with NBA season win totals and props there. And I've actually done, had a lot of success in baseball. And I just was like, why am I not just doing a separate bankroll for futures and then having one for the regular season to use, you know, and adjusting from there? And because I found out if you're really breaking down the math, I would have to kind of figure, okay, well, I still have like 33% of my bankroll in the season wins and another, you know, 10% on some games of the year. And I'm trying to adjust week to week based on how I'm doing with, you know, 57% of my bankroll. It just got a little more confusing. And so I actually think it's just kind of, maybe it's more OCD or being organized, but I just find it a lot easier. And then again, like Adam brought up initially, you can really see where your strengths and weaknesses are. Like my college football futures and regular season are the two, you know, biggest quote unquote ROI returns on investment that I have in, you know, of any league preseason or regular season. So it's nice because you can kind of categorize everything and really see where your edges are and how well you do. And then honestly, if say you lose like 5 years in a row betting college hoops or baseball or the NBA, you know, at that point you can probably say it's not even worth betting anymore, and you'll move that money into where you're strong or where your strengths are and just maximize your profitability that way.
And I think that all of this is really important for our listeners here. You have to be organized. You want to be organized. I mean, you have to be tracking your bets, looking at your closing line value, seeing what works for you, seeing what doesn't work for you. And I think having separate bankrolls for, you know, for different leagues and also, as you talked about there, for some of that future stuff, I think that's just really, really smart. It's great use of money management. Hopefully our listeners do adopt some of those techniques here. Of course, we've got, you know, we'll be going into the summer here, so you'll have all the NFL season win totals, futures, NBA will be coming around with season win totals in what, probably August or so. So those will be available again. So those are all really important things to keep in mind. Let's look at a couple of specific markets here, Preston. Let's start with college basketball. As I told you before we started recording here, a lot of the talk on our show has been top 25, the power conferences. I want to go a little bit deeper here, and I want to ask you if there are some of those low major conferences where you feel like you almost on a nightly basis are getting value in some of those leagues.
Yeah, I think I've talked a little bit about this before on this show, or at least other shows that people maybe have listened to me on, and I honestly still adhere to it pretty regularly. But if you're college basketball, there's so many teams and so many games. Unless you can really dedicate your entire life to following all of them, you're not going to be very good at any of them. And so I would say there's definitely opportunity to profit in every single conference, and especially a lot of those smaller ones, like Adam said. And so what I recommend to people who are just starting is to take one or two conferences and just start with handicapping those and following their games and looking up box scores and closing lines and year numbers and adjusting them for, you know, one or two leagues. And so that's actually how I started with college football years ago, whatever it's been now, 9 years ago or whatever it was when I really started getting into it. I was betting Mountain West Conference football and Pac-12 football. And I just kind of branched out from there. But it's I wasn't doing it full time before, so that was a lot of the reason. I think to really, like, you could really break it down, like, how many hours you need to spend per conference or team. And if you only have, you know, 10 hours a week, you shouldn't be trying to do, you know, a 351 team college basketball card or week. It just is too extensive. And so I would break it down to say one or two conferences. One that I always followed, because similarly, I was, you know, I was at BYU in Utah. I did the Mountain West Conference for college basketball, and then BYU moved to the West Coast Conference, the WCC, and so I still follow that conference very, very in-depthly. That's not even a word, in-depth. And so I will regularly have plays in that league, you know, BYU, Gonzaga, St. Mary's, San Francisco, Santa Clara, Portland. Those are some of the teams in that conference. And I follow it pretty closely because I want to more than anything, and I have time to do that outside of some of the major conferences. Another one I still do is I cap the Mountain West pretty regularly. But this year and last year, more so than any other seasons, I've tried to be I've put the time into the same amount of time into less conferences versus the same amount of time into a lot of conferences. And I'd like to think that it's helped. It doesn't necessarily show in my win-loss rate, but in my closing line value and, like, expected ROI rate, this is actually the best year I've ever had in college basketball. So I actually am confident that what I, you know, the change I made was good, and I've focused less on some of the smaller conferences, like, you know, the MAC or the MEAC or the Colonial or the Ivy, you know, stuff where I used to, you know, always believe. And it's true, if you have the time, there's edges at all those conferences. And so there's people on the East Coast or in the Midwest or whatever, find that one or two small conference league that you love and go for it. You know, try to cap all those small games and set your numbers. And there's some bad ones that you can take advantage of for sure. You know, if you look at my actual, like, history of all my picks this year, I definitely haven't bet many that were outside of some of the major conferences, the Mountain West or the West Coast Conference, and the Pac-12 obviously is on the West here, but that's a major conference anyway. And I would say, I think there was one game, there was like a really bad Tennessee Chattanooga line once or twice, and there was like a Towson game where it was a really, really bad line. And other than those three games, I think I've basically stuck to major conferences or Mountain West and WCC. So that's kind of my, I guess, you know, timeline as far as what I'm doing for college basketball and focusing on smaller conference versus not. But for me, it makes sense to follow the West Coast Conference and the Mountain West. For someone else, you know, it might be the MAC or the Colonial, you know, like I said. So you kind of just make the decision yourself. But the ultimate idea is put about the same amount of time that you would have put maybe into trying to cap all of the games into just two conferences. And I think you'll see your efficiency and profitability go way up, you know, versus trying to do the entire card all at once. So, I think that's everything. I don't know if you had any other particular questions regarding small conferences, Adam.
So I guess a follow-up question here then, Preston, would be, when you're looking at those small conferences, you know, there's not as big of a betting handle. There's certainly nowhere near as much public action. So do you feel like another benefit for people that are following those conferences is that the line moves are sharper in nature and therefore, you know, maybe a little bit easier to discern, a little bit easier to get value out of?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it on, like, the biggest scale possible in the Super Bowl yesterday where, you know, it's rare to see pretty, you know, the line sat at 3 all week, which surprised me. I thought the Patriots would actually go up a half point. It's hard to move the line when there's a lot of, you know, public money. There's just not enough sharp money that really can do anything to it. So on a smaller scale, you know, betting Duke, North Carolina this week, I think it's coming up this week at least, you know, that's going to be a little different than betting the, you know, BYU Portland game. And so like Adam was referring to, there's definitely going to be some edges. I mean, when you see a small conference game move, you know, 3 or 4 points, well, for one, there's generally only one person or group that moves it that big. But if you see it, I mean, that's pretty legitimate. And you know, that's pretty telling. And maybe sometimes you'll see a little buyback, but not as often as maybe you'll see a 2-point move in a Duke North Carolina game and then see it, you know, get bought back a little bit on the other side. So whether it's public money or another sharp group playing the other side, you know, it could be either one. And so I think it's fair to assume that, you know, if you're able to get ahead of those moves in the smaller conferences, betting the night before the limits go really, really up at every book. And in college basketball, the limits aren't a ton anyways. And so ultimately, I would say if you think you can beat some of the moves and you're going to be a profitable handicapper and better in college basketball, you know, try to bet them the night before because, yeah, you might wake up and you might see that, you know, Portland BYU the other night, for example, you know, was 20 the night before, and then it was 17.5 or 18, you know, the next morning. And if you like Portland plus 20, all the numbers covered, but that's, you know, that 2 points is going to end up being a massive, you know, either help to your bottom line or be really negative to your bottom line if you're taking plus 18 instead of plus 20 long term. So if you're confident you can beat the numbers and the moves and stuff, you're going to see a lot of them in the small conferences. So definitely would recommend trying to bet them earlier if possible. And, you know, if you see a massive move like 3 or 4 points in a small conference, I would definitely just wanted to make sure I said before we wrapped it up, don't chase that. Don't lay -5 when it was -2 or whatever earlier that day. That's like such a huge gap in how much your expected ROI is supposed to be that honestly, I would think that a lot of the guys, you know, the group that laid -2, they'd tell you if it got to 5 or 6, there's probably value on +6. So definitely don't chase that steam. I would recommend just, kind of clarify, I wasn't bringing it up for that reason. I was just referring to, yeah, when you do see those moves, they are a lot of the time smaller conferences.
Well, and of course, that's another element of market entry, which we've talked about here before on the segment in terms of if you want to bet those smaller conferences, probably want to get that market entry in on the overnights, you know, especially if you think that you're going to be right with the line, because if you wait until the morning, you're going to be taking a worse number and it could be as much as a full possession worse. So that'll be something for you to keep in mind here. Well, Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com, lots of good thoughts here on today's segment. What's going on over there at the website right now?
Just doing hoops now. Football's over. Super Bowl's over. So just grinding. Have 2 NBA plays tonight, which is pointless for people that are listening. It's Tuesday morning. But, yeah, just focusing on that and betting that through the NBA Finals. And honestly, kind of starting. I started my baseball preparation this week, so I'm kind of excited getting ready for some diamond and, you know, fantasy and as well as actually modeling and betting these teams in the Major League Baseball. So, yeah, well, as that gets closer, I did an MLB baseball like guide like I do for college or I did for the NBA. Last year's did really, really well, and I'll probably write that up again. It's nice to kind of give my projection on every team, how many wins I expect, and then the actual season win total line is, and those are going to be coming out and offering, you know, value on overs and unders and futures and this and that. So actually going to be kind of baseball minded here for the next month or two as hoops continues on, but it should be a good time.
Yeah. Well, you and I are going to get to compare notes because I do a season win total preview for every team over at bangthebook.com and those are pretty extensive. So you and I'll have to see which one of us gets bragging rights. And of course we're in 2 fantasy leagues together this year. So we'll have bragging rights to fight about for that as well. So Preston, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
No problem. Take care.
There you go. There's this week's edition of Hunting for Winners with Sports Cheetah. Coming up the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio, we'll have Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday wagering segment tomorrow. No idea exactly what we're going to talk about with him yet, aside from the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. That's the PGA Tour event here this week. We'll chat about that one with him. Very unique event. Big field, 156 players. Also, everybody paired up with an amateur. They have Pro-Am teams, hence the name. Some amateurs are better than others. Some of them ex-athletes, some of them current athletes, a lot of them entertainers. Justin Timberlake plays, Jake Owen plays. You've got Steve Young, Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith, a very vast array of different personalities and players in that event here. So we'll talk about that one with Wes on Wednesday. Coming up on Thursday, what I've dubbed the Thursday meeting show with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, also Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com, and then Thursday with UFC, a pay-per-view event coming up here this weekend. Should get Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com on the show. Not sure if that'll happen or not. I'll have to reach out to him and double-check. No Rob Pozzola on Friday. He's unable to join the show, so we'll have two guests. Not quite sure who they will be, but we'll figure them out. Otherwise, I'll talk some NHL and some MLB on Friday's show. But we should have a lot of good stuff coming your way here the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. So thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.